Crime fiction has gone through the roof. It used to be old ladies who read Agatha Christie. Now it's ever so fashionable to read thrillers, especially after the success of Gone Girl. And today I'm very happy to welcome onto Radio Gorgeous a woman who has just published her much-awaited second novel. The first was Obsession, which was a bestseller in 2017. We're talking about Guilt by Amanda Robson. She was a medical researcher, and now she's a full-time author. Hi, and welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, thank you. It's lovely to be here and lovely to meet you, Josephine.
So Guilt involves two sisters, Zara and Miranda, who could not be more different. I mean, you know, I couldn't believe it. But can you describe their characteristics?
Yes, well, they're twin sisters, non-identical twin sisters, and they love each other very much and they support each other very much, but they are very different. Miranda is a much calmer, less edgy personality, and because she's much calmer, she copes a lot better with the stresses of academia and she gets better A-levels and she goes to university much more quickly. Zara is rather more vulnerable and she gets rather worried about her exams. She messes up her A-levels and it takes her 10 years to before she has the confidence to go to university. However, having said that, she's a much more fun, outgoing, gregarious girl with lots more friends and lots more boyfriends. And she's just as clever as her sister, but she's just more emotionally vulnerable, at least at the start of the book.
Ah. So can you tell us about their relationship as twins?
Well, they're just very, very close. They're brought up together by a mother. Their father's not there. And they're just this very, very intense and close and always looking out for one another, whatever happens.
Because they're living together, which some people might say, oh, I can't stand the thought of living with my sister. Is that literally because there is a thing about twins, they need to see each other. There's a kind of yearning to kind of confirm. You confirm your identity by seeing your twin every day.
I think I set it up really because Zara had been vulnerable. She's a cutter. She had a breakdown before her A-levels. She's always been vulnerable and a bit of a worry to her other twin, Miranda, and her mother. So when she finally gets the self-confidence to do a degree at university, Miranda is living in Bristol and has a job in Bristol. So it just... I needed to contrive a situation where they needed to be together, and the situation that I decided would be if your sister was stable in a job and you'd always been a bit vulnerable, that your mother might want to encourage you to live together in a
and sort of. And Zara's doing a photographic kind of art course.
Yes, at UWE.
Yeah, fantastic. So what is it about twins and women and sisters, because they're all three things, that fascinate you?
Well, I'm not a twin. I have had some close friends who are twins, but I've always been very close to the women in my life. Generationally, I was very close to my great-grandmother, who I was lucky enough to have till I was 11, and my grandmother I was very close to, and I'm very, very close to my mother, who I'm very lucky to still have. She's 85 now. Oh. And I've always had strong relationships with my girlfriends, so I think, although I have a brother who I'm also very close to, but I think... I just imagined, I've always wanted to write a triangular three-way thriller. Because I'm close to my girlfriends, I've always sort of imagined what might happen if a man came between us or what would stretch our very close relationships. So I just wanted to try and think of a situation that would be two women as close as possible before we stretched it in the story.
Yes, because they kind of know what each other's thinking, they know the emotion, they know exactly when, you know, that's a bit strange, they're out, you know what I mean? They know everything about each other, don't they?
Yes. Mm.
So the book contains a secret. Should we keep secrets from our sisters?
If we're doing it to protect them, perhaps.
Okay. So if it's a white kind of lie or a white secret,
yes,
then it's okay. All right. Okay. It's set in the West Country, the city of Bristol, which you've already mentioned. Can you tell us why it was set there and what's your personal connection with the city?
Well, yes, I love Bristol. A very close friend of mine moved there about 20 years ago, so I've visited it regularly. And then both my sons went to university there, one after the other. So I've visited it for many, many years. And I think it's a lovely, youthful, vibrant city. And it's much more affordable for young people than London too. And it's more quirky, actually,
yes,
because there's more independent businesses. So I thought it would be really fun. And there's lots of young, there's lots of head offices and lovely young working people too. So I just thought it would be a good place to set these two girls living together.
I've had experience because I worked at BBC Radio Bristol loved Bristol. And also the first time I went there when I was 21, which is sort of early 1980s, it was the first time I ever saw anyone recycling. Right. And it was a kind of, you know, it was an alternative culture. You know, it was grown up from kind of hippiness. And it's still got that sort of rainbow flag. Kind of, it's got a kind of got rasters there. It's sort of got that kind of nice, relaxed feeling of a good vibe, and everybody smiles at you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a lovely way of describing it. And they have Banksy as well. And I think they have a good, like you said, they have a good music scene too with the young people.
Yeah, we're encouraging anybody under 30 who can't afford to live in London, go there now.
It's not that cheap there either. It's going up in price now.
So a man comes into Zara's life. Can you tell us about him and his personality?
Well, I don't want to tell you too much about him because I think it's a spoiler, but he's a dark and mysterious personality, and the story of his past also is infiltrated through the novel. But I think we probably should leave it there with him.
Exactly. Just to say one thing, that Miranda does feel a pull towards Seb, but there's something she can't pinpoint about his personality, isn't there?
Yeah, but I do think we should change and move on there.
Okay. All right, so we can't go on anymore. All we can know is that something very dark happens. So let's get personal with you, Amanda. Let's, you know, much easier to go on to more about you, because you're here now. Which sister are you like? Are you the controlled one, or are you the more arty one?
I think all my characters are just a mix of everything, so I don't think I'm particularly either one or the other. But I have to say, I did find doing exams very stressful. I used to find when you turn the page over at the start of an exam, I could barely read the words in front of me.
Because you're panicking so much.
Yeah, so that I think that part of Zara's character... you see, I love writing now because you can take as long as you want and you can just relax, and I love it, and I don't get stressed. Even if I've got a tight deadline or I've got a lot to do or everybody's something, family, I don't know, I can just shut the door and enjoy writing because you can take as long as you want. But with the time scale thing of exams and almost how much sort of in our always hinged upon A-levels. I think it's got even worse for young people now.
Yeah.
You know, in my day, you used to have hurdles. If you jumped over a hurdle, something good would happen. And now, if you fail at a hurdle, it just seemed to be blocked. You know, if you don't get really good A-levels, everybody's sort of rude and says you probably shouldn't go to university. You go to university and you don't get a really good class degree, it's getting harder and harder to get a job. Whereas in our day, if you got a degree at all, it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And if you got any A-levels at all, even if they were bad grades, people were just proud
impressed
of you because you've got A-levels.
Yeah.
So I do think it's even worse now. But I do relate to that aspect of Zara's personality. Of just finding exams very, very stressful.
Okay, so I related to her in the way Zara... I didn't relate at all to Miranda. I mean, she's like the opposite of me. I'm kind of flamboyant, and I'm vulnerable, and I'm emotional, you know, and I'm artistic. So I really related to Zara, And I found Miranda a bit annoying in the way sometimes that she was so controlled, you know.
Yes.
And it made me want to kind of kick her, let go a bit. But she is an accountant, so.
No.
Or a lawyer, is she?
No, she's an accountant.
Accountant, yeah, so that's got to be someone. I mean, I can't even do more than sort of like, I can't do 7 times tables, you know. I've got a real block with maths, and so she sort of is the kind of goody-goody that I probably would have found annoying. But it's very good to have them, just because then it gives a much more dynamism to the story, doesn't it, because of that?
Yes, I wanted them to be different, so...
So tell us about your career before writing. You studied sciences at university. Did you become a scientist then?
Yes, I did. When I left university, I worked in research at the London School of Hygiene, and I worked at the poisons unit at Guy's Hospital, and then I worked for quite a few years actually in the pharmaceutical industry, so as a medical writer in the pharmaceutical industry. So
writing, you were going towards writing all the time.
Yes.
Tell us about working in the poison unit, because that is just fascinating.
Well, it was fascinating. I worked, it was a National Poisons Information Service, and it's a 24-hour, there were 12 information officers and we had some backup medics, but we maintained a shift system to have a 24-hour emergency telephone answering service for members of the medical profession only if they needed some more information on poisoning. So if they've got a case in hospital of poisoning, then they I mean they obviously have a very wide range of training with GPs, but they don't necessarily have all the information on poisoning at their fingertips. So it was a sort of information service to help them.
Has the government got rid of this?
No, they haven't. They decentralised it. Okay. It used to be at Guy's and now it's in, I think it's Cardiff, Birmingham. I'm not quite sure because it's such a long time ago, but they have decentralised it, which was a shame because we were quite proud of it all when it was at Guy's.
Yeah. And also, I hate to say it, but if they water it down, then it might not be so expert.
I don't know. I've read about it. I don't know. I mean, friends of mine, it's a very long time since I worked there. I think they have kept it to a good standard, but they've just sort of changed how they organise it and rotate it. If anyone's listening, who knows?
but it was
a happy time. It was interesting. I mean, we used to get inquiries on all types of poisoning.
Yeah, so, can you tell us an example?
We used to get inquiries about prescription drug overdose. I mean, obviously a lot of people who are on antidepressants or sleeping depressed, so there's a high level of suicide attempts in people like that. And there's also people who take recreational drugs where things go terribly wrong. So there's drug overdose, industrial accidents, even people who ingest plants or berries on a walk that's dangerous. Mushrooms. I would never eat wild mushrooms, even in the poshest restaurant, after some of the calls we had. And then there's children do so many dreadful things in the home. I mean, the number of children that go into the cupboard under the sink, and I mean, why they suddenly would decide to eat dishwasher tablets or want to drink bleach, or I mean, it's incredible all the funny things that happen. Or swallowing batteries. We used to get little children that swallowed lithium batteries and things. Yeah. So it was very interesting and varied. A number of inquiries we were dealing with.
Isn't it like there's more kind of you're more likely to die from an accident in the home than anywhere else?
They do quote that statistically, but I'm not sure how much it means really when you think statistically you're in the home more than you are anywhere else too.
But you don't think you think of home as a safe place.
I think it is generally though, don't you? I mean, when you think of the number of hours we all spend. Yeah. Having said that, I slipped out of the shower yesterday and went flying. So,
yeah, that could have been serious. You could have banged your head. You could have, So, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you.
Oh, gosh, I'm suddenly really worried about you.
A bit of an aside to the interview.
Exactly. So, how has the influence of your career, starting off like in poison scientist, then going into a writer for medical journals, how has that influenced your career as a writer?
Well, I have always wanted to write a novel since I was 12 years old when I first read Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca. And I did a science degree quite pragmatically because I left school in 1978 and we were on the brink of a recession. And I was advised by senior teachers and my parents to do a science degree because they thought it'd be easier to get a job. So actually, I've really wanted to write a novel or be much more arty-farty for my whole life. And my science career, to be perfectly honest, is something I've wanted to pull away from, basically. And but I think I have used poisoning in my first novel, Obsession. So I think it's in my psyche that I'm still interested in certain issues to do with medicine and poisoning. I mean, in some of it, but an awful lot of it, some people say I'm the most non-scientific scientist they've ever met because I never watch a documentary about science. I always watch something arty-farty or a drama or I want to go to the theatre or, you know.
Very interesting. So you've got both sides in you then, and you know.
Well, I have, but I much prefer the art side. So I know I shouldn't say that when I'm supposed to be a poisons expert, but it's the truth.
Tell me about, how did you get, did you do writing courses? How did you do creative writing?
I did A-level English. I didn't do the exam because I hate exams, but I did A-level English. I always regretted not doing A-level English at school. My English teacher was really cross with me for dropping it and spent ages and hours trying to persuade me not to. And I'd love to get in touch with him now and say, you were right, mate. But anyway, when my younger son went to school when he was 5, I did A-level English at the local sixth form college.
Wonderful.
And
I
just loved doing that.
Brilliant.
And sorry,
I'm asking, how did that lead? How did you get into writing after your career?
Well, I just always, it was something I always wanted to do. And I always, since I was 12, I wanted to write a novel. And then I was busy bringing up my children, one thing and another. And I always wrote poems, always wrote poetry. Sometimes I remember we visited Auschwitz and I found it so distressing and I found it cathartic to write a poem. So I was always part of me wanting to write. But when the boys became late teenagers and my husband was busy with his career and my elder son was applying for university, my younger son was doing his GCSEs, I really realised I'd suddenly just become an enabler, and they were all flying off and doing what they wanted. Because it's a very exciting stage in your life, isn't it, when you're 18 and you're applying to university. And I just suddenly sort of wanted that feeling back that I'd got something ahead of me that I really wanted to do. And I started to write. And I wrote for a few years. And then I went on the Faber Academy course, and the novel writing course, and that was excellent. And then I carried on writing, and then...
And you got the agent and you got published, which is amazing.
Yes, but I changed genres. I first of all, I wrote a very silly novel about almost just about myself
and
my life.
That's what I always say you should do.
And I put it under the bed in it. But at least that gave me the opportunity to just practice writing, although it wasn't an interesting enough story to ever get published. And then I spent about 6 or 7 years researching and writing a historical fiction book, which I really loved. And I spent a long time on that, spent a year even just researching it. But I got quite a lot of interest. I got it pulled in by quite a few agents and a few small publishing houses, but I never actually got an agent and I never actually got anyone to publish it. But I would get comments back, so I knew I was sort of getting up there. And then I decided to change genres and write something more commercially popular, like a psychological thriller. And I wrote that much more quickly. It came to me more naturally to do that. So after struggling for 7 years, I wrote my novel Obsession only in about 6 months. Wow. And I sent it out quite quickly. And then I got an agent quite quickly. And she got me a book deal quite quickly. So it all came together in the end really well. But I showed my agent my historical novel. And she didn't like to say, she said, I think you found your voice now, dear. You know, she was so lovely. She didn't want to say anything discouraging. But see, I love my historical novel, but it's just nobody else
does. It's a baby, no one wants
it. I better not go back to it. I'll probably spend another 20 years on it and still nobody wants it.
So who are your support team when you write? What happens with your family? Do they just say, oh, go on, Mum, just shut the door, we won't disturb you? How do you do it?
Well, my sons are they're 28 and 25 now, so they're very supportive, and they don't even live at home. My 25-year-old's at home just briefly at
of
the
moment. Of course he is.
But the 28, well, in fact, everyone's at home because the older ones are having work done on their flat, but they basically, most of the time, they're not at home.
Okay.
And so it's just it's my husband, and he's very supportive, and he's in fact my first reader.
Wow.
Because ever since I met him when I was 18, we've been together forever, and he loves reading. And see, this book, Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca, that I love, he loves it as well. And we've always liked quite a lot of all the same type of writing and literature. So he's my first reader.
God,
and he's honest
amazing.
With me. He's
oh
honest with me. So these other books that never got published, he was always, you know, it was as soon as he read my one that's got published, he said, I think this will get published. He said to me as soon as he read it, whereas he hadn't said that about the others. So I do trust his opinion.
Fantastic. God, but also to think that you still get on and he reads the book, you know, that's also incredible to me. I'd never let my husband read mine, because if he said one bad comment, I would just...
Oh, well, I did sulk. I mean, when I first started, we were on a skiing holiday, and I gave up skiing for 10 years because I was frightened, and I was writing on my skiing holiday, and then eventually I plucked up courage to show him some of my first novel, and he really didn't like it, and he said, you know, tell me the truth. And, and he said, you're only doing this for a bit of fun, aren't you? You're only doing it for a hobby or something. And I can't remember what he said exactly, so I shouldn't have minded, but whatever he said, he let me know it wasn't good enough. And he was right.
Did that fire you up?
Well, I was furious. Yeah, I was in such a bad mood. I remember going walking through the valley along by the river, and I went for a swim. And I just remember I was swimming in the swimming pool. I thought, I want to get published one day. That's what I want. And I was quite determined, and I just carried on and on working and trying. But it did take me a long time. But it takes a lot of people. I mean, people who love writing always just keep going, don't they? They love it so
doesn't
much,
matter
they can't
what.
Stop.
Yeah, they can't stop, yeah. So just to let you know that I read your book when I was in Goa, and I read it within 2 days. I could not put it down. I enjoyed Guilt so much.
Well, that's a lovely thing for you to say, and on your interview. That's really lovely. Thank you so much.
So thank you so much for coming on. And I do urge people to go into shops and make this another bestseller, because it's absolutely riveting story. And thank you. It's edgy, it's interesting, and wow, what a page turner.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's lovely to come here and meet you today. That's really nice. Thank you.
Guilt by Amanda Robson is published by Avon Books. And for even more incredible women talking about books, well-being, art, science, go to radiogorgeous.com or iTunes.